The Dark Arts of Genius, Episode 6. Hello, I'm Robert Jameson, and I'm interested in how we can make the world a better place by unlocking people's potential for intelligent thinking. These podcasts are intended to be useful to anyone who is interested in developing the thinking capabilities that are at the heart of genius. They address what, for many people, is the downright offensive subject of how some people are so much more intelligent than others. If you don't want to take the risk of being offended, then this series is not for you. As previously emphasized, a discussion on any topic can become bogged down by prejudice. But the most likely to be most severely affected are topics that stir up a strong emotional response. That's one reason why sex-related subjects are amongst the very best ones to consider and discuss if you want to practice the skills of intelligent thinking. Sexual issues involve many emotions, conventions, and taboos. These fuel countless prejudices, and becoming intelligent is largely about developing the awareness and skills to challenge and overcome such prejudices. And by way of encouraging a little practice, I wanted to suggest a little thought exercise about the age of consent. The age of consent is not merely a topic likely to expose strong opinions. It is an issue many people find it particularly difficult to consider rationally because their thought processes become crippled by fear, often an intense form of fear closely related to conformism. Having an intelligent discussion on this issue has become even more difficult in the wake of certain well-publicised sexual scandals of recent years. There have always been sexual scandals, but perhaps today's sexual scandals are accompanied by rather more hysterical reactions than used to be the case. The result, perhaps, of the modern media's desire and skills at stoking up such hysteria. And there's a lot of paranoia around. Paranoia about sexual predators. Paranoia about paedophiles, supposedly driving around in fleets of white vans, looking to snatch children off the street. In such an environment, the age of consent is a very thorny issue indeed. You're talking about an issue that unavoidably combines the concept of children and sex in the same discussions. Far too risky a topic for most people to dare tackling. And those that do participate are generally obsessed with following the politically correct line as a way of cementing their anti-paedophile credentials. They're too fearful to discuss the issue intelligently. Many seem nothing less than absolutely terrified that one slip-up, one single hesitation to confirm the PC line, will result in suspicious whispers behind their backs and a lifetime of suspicious glances aimed in their direction. Do some of them protest too much, one wonders? Such attitudes create rather a tense atmosphere when the subject is raised, which makes it all the more of a challenge for people to consider or discuss the issue intelligently. But that's precisely why I've brought the subject up. So, what about the age of consent? At what age should a person be deemed, by the law, to be capable of consenting to sex? The age of consent where I live is 16. It's higher in some countries or states, and lower in others. So, what should it be? Every now and again, someone will suggest, perhaps in an opinion piece in a newspaper or on a news website, that the age of sexual consent should be lowered. Such suggestions are often met with rather hysterical reactions. And the people who make such suggestions are often assaulted with abuse. Abuse which only sometimes holds back from accusing the person who made the suggestion of being a paedophile and child abuser. No wonder people are scared to fairly consider the issue. But such intimidation is plain wrong, and we shouldn't surrender to it. Unfortunately, most people do surrender to this intimidation. But through being scared and succumbing to their fears, they render themselves unable to consider the idea in a remotely fair or reasonable manner. And yet there are some very good arguments, including what ought to be some fairly obvious arguments, as to why the age of consent should be lowered. It seems the most obvious one is a critical issue of freedom. In stipulating an age of consent, the state is taking quite a drastic step. It is taking away people's freedoms to make their own choices about their own private lives. It is imposing its will on its citizens, imposing a threat of imprisonment if people do not conduct their personal relationships in line with how the state dictates they must be conducted. This is not to say the imposition of an age of consent cannot be justified, only that it is a very serious step, potential infringement upon some very basic and natural freedoms. Such interference may only be justified under strict conditions. State interference is almost certainly justified in regard to having an age of consent above 12 or 13 and possibly above 14. But what about at 15? A 15-year-old female, for example, can be physically and emotionally mature and perfectly capable of having and nurturing a child. If that is the case, then what right does the state have to deny her the freedom to bear children? None would appear to be the obvious answer. If the young woman's actions are not doing anyone else any harm, and if she is not being harmed in any way, then on what basis exactly can the state possibly justify such draconian restrictions? Shouldn't such interference be considered an abuse of state power and a clear violation of her basic human rights? Of course, it can be and is argued that most 15-year-olds are not mature and responsible enough to have sex. This is very probably true. But how can that be said to justify taking away basic natural freedoms from those 15-year-olds who are mature enough and who are ready to make excellent parents? Do we want to see 15-year-old mothers and fathers? Perhaps many people would rather not. But so what? What right would we have, morally, to interfere so fundamentally in other people's lives? Supposedly we believe in freedom. If so, then we ought to insist on setting a high bar for when the state is allowed to override our personal decisions. We may believe that, in an ideal world, people would not have sex at all until they are 16, 18, or even 21. But in a free society, the state has no right to enforce its ideals upon anyone. All it is justified in doing is enforcing minimum standards, where behaviour that fell below that standard would clearly involve abuse or cause some serious form of harm in some way. The state can, quite justifiably, on behalf of the people, attempt to encourage what it sees as higher standards, but ethically can only enforce minimum standards, the minimum standards required to maintain a peaceful society. A state that enforces laws to impose its own ideals is a dangerous and dictatorial one, one whose existence is incompatible with the concept of a free society. Another problem is that having an age of consent at 16 or higher means that we are not prepared to enforce these laws in a fair, consistent, and non-discriminatory fashion. Indeed, age of consent laws, as currently enforced, have got very little to do with protecting young people. They're really much more to do with excusing discrimination and pandering to prejudice. We pretend that we wish to protect young people from abuse and from the pressures and risks of sex, but this is largely nonsense. In general, we do little or nothing to stop young teenagers having sex, even when they are below the age of consent. We barely lift a finger even to discourage them from having sex. The PC position is not that children should never have sex. Indeed, modern sex education in schools often seems to encourage children to believe that sex amongst underage people is perfectly normal and acceptable. What really gets people worked up is not the harm caused to children, through them having underage sex, but the thought of a much older man matched up with a much younger woman. In fact, many people would be more offended by the idea of a 50-year-old man, a dirty old man as they would perceive him, having sex with a 17-year-old than they are by the idea of two 14, 13 or even 12-year-olds having sex with each other. So it's actually sexual age gaps that many people are so offended by, not the idea of children having sex at all. This may seem like a mad prejudice, but age of consent laws are, in practice, used chiefly to pander to such prejudices. In many countries, age of consent laws are used almost exclusively in cases where there is a significant age difference between sexual partners. Some countries actually have close-in-age exceptions to their age of consent laws. Many other countries, without these exceptions, still only prosecute when the people involved are not close in age, despite there being no basis in law for such discriminatory policies. But where exactly is the scientific evidence that close-in-age relationships are any better or more successful than those that involve a significant age difference? If a young woman, for example, is mature enough to have sex, then what does it matter if her partner is much older than she is? From either a moral or legal perspective, it shouldn't really make any difference at all. And if a young woman is too young and immature to be having sex, then she is too young and immature to be having sex with anyone, regardless of how old her partner is. It does not make it okay simply because her partner is of the same age as she is. Unfortunately, what a lot of people actually want, and currently get, is a law that allows or even encourages discrimination. A law that excuses, backs and gives force to their age gap related prejudices, so that people can be selectively prosecuted according to these prejudices rather than in accordance with any decent principles of justice. But really, age of consent laws ought to be about protecting young people from harm, not about enforcing modern cultural prejudices. The law should also apply equally to all, with only rather limited exceptions, such as with very young children and those with mental conditions who don't understand the seriousness of their actions. If the age of consent is 16, then we should be prepared to prosecute everyone above the age of criminal responsibility who has sex with anyone under that age. But it seems clear that we are not prepared to do so. We are not prepared to prosecute a 15-year-old for having sex with another 15-year-old. Except in very rare circumstances, we're not prepared to prosecute a 16 or 17-year-old either. But with a lower age of consent, at 15, 14 or 13, we might be prepared to enforce the law more equally. And that's why it could be argued that perhaps the age of consent should be lowered in order to protect children and teenagers from sexual abuse. To many people, that might seem like a contradiction in terms, but it isn't. The trouble with a relatively high age of consent, 16 or higher, is that it is, in practice, unenforceable. Or at least, our societies are not prepared to enforce such a position. And everybody knows it. That means that laws on age of consent are frequently ignored. Ignored on many millions of occasions every year. They are seen as advisory, only leading to a prosecution in exceptional circumstances. Most people who engage in sexual activity with underage young people do not realistically fear arrest. They feel that their own young age will allow them to escape the law. But if a 14-year-old is not ready for sex, then he/she is not ready for sex. Not with a 30-year-old, but not with another 14-year-old either. A lower age of consent could be an age of consent that could be applied firmly and consistently, and one that could be rigorously enforced, with there being far less of a case to argue that such enforcement was an unreasonable restriction of her freedoms. So, there are some good strong arguments for suggesting the age of consent might currently be higher than is justified, and for suggesting that a lower age of consent, which could be more fairly and consistently enforced, might do far more to protect young people from harm than an unrealistically high age of consent that our society is only prepared to enforce in order to pander to irrational age gap-related prejudices. To be intelligent, you have to be able to fairly consider such arguments. You don't have to accept them, but you do have to be prepared to accept them. Prepared to accept arguments if you can't find any flaws in them. It might not seem to be a huge distinction, but it is the distinction between intelligence and stupidity, and consequently an extremely important one. There are all sorts of reasonable opinions that can be held on such an issue, but intelligent arguments are difficult to come by in a climate of fear. Fear leads to prejudice, and intelligent thinking requires us not to be constrained by such fears. That's the end of this episode. I hope you found it interesting. To find out more about my work, please visit imos.org.uk. That's imos.org.uk. And please join me again for episode 7, the final episode in this series. Thank you for listening.